listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
You're ready to launch yourself into the latest Rockets news. You are listening to the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I am your host, LaShard Binkley. I am the director of basketball operation for Overtime Heroics. I'm a contributor for Space City Scoop. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at HTown for Life, 40 all caps. Be sure to follow the official Apollo Media account at Apollo HOU. That's Apollo HOU is all caps, that just hit over 10,000 followers. And of course, we appreciate that, everyone that's following our main account. And make sure you hit the subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. Today, we have a very special guest. We are joined by a Pistons beat writer for Detroit News. He is creator of hashtag Start Writing and Wayne Sports TV analyst. We're joined by a longtime Detroit sports writer, Rod Beard. First off, thank you for jumping on and joining us today.
No, not a problem at all. Thanks for having me on.
And one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on today, because one of the several topics that we're going to talk about today, of course, is the draft that's happening in less than 2 weeks. And I wanted to have Rod on because Detroit and Houston may not seem like a natural fit as far as teams that have something in common, but there actually is a lot in common, especially with the draft coming on, with Detroit having the first pick and the Rockets having the second pick. We're going to talk about some of the, you know, going on with the drafts leading into the draft on the 29th. We're also going to discuss Christian Wood, who was a member of Detroit Pistons a couple years ago. And we're also in the final segment, we're going to talk about the actual finals that's going on. I'm going to get Rod's opinion on some of the things that's happened so far in the playoffs leading up to these finals. But first, I wanted to start off, Rod, could you give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself?
Well, I grew up in Detroit, been covering high school and college and pro sports in Detroit for the past 20 years or so, and just love writing and the voice that it's able to give me and the opinions that I'm able to put out there, and just being in that community is just an awesome job to have and to be able to go back and forth with fans and to interact with folks. It's just the best job you can have to be able to watch sports and to be paid to do it is you can't beat it.
Yeah, you've been covering Detroit sports for like 20 years now. I think you pretty much covered every sport in Detroit. You cover basketball, football, all different types of sports. Is that correct?
Yeah. Started out in high school with basketball and football, and then just expanded out and done NBA stuff for the most part and covered Michigan basketball for 5 years as well. So basketball is kind of the backbone of what I've done, but it's a lot more stuff. And it's just fun to cover golf or soccer or tennis or just whatever the situation calls for.
Yeah, and kind of one of the first questions I wanted to talk about in this first segment is, of course, like I said, with the draft coming up in less than 2 weeks, there's been a lot of rumblings going on about whether Detroit is going to keep that first pick or whether they were going to possibly trade out of that first pick. So what's kind of been the sense there in Detroit or with the Detroit front office that you heard as far as do they plan on keeping a pick? And is there any chance that they plan on trading out of that first pick? What's kind of been the thought around Detroit in these last couple of weeks as far as the draft?
Well, I think it started on lottery night when the general manager, Troy Weaver, said that, hey, it is up for debate. There are five guys that we're looking at, and it's not just a – hey, this is one choice and we're done. I think he's kept an open mind about what he wants to do. And if you look at what he did last year in the draft and having the number seven pick and then trading and getting two additional picks, that he's not afraid to shake the boat a little bit and to do some things a little bit differently than people thought. And he overturned the roster almost completely. There's one player from the previous season who's still on the roster this year, and that was their draft pick, that year, first round draft pick in 2019. So I think he's really looking to get Detroit on the fast track to being a team that can contend for the playoffs and to be right there. And with the two of the three draft picks being in the all-rookie team, he's shown that he has an acumen for scouting talent, figuring out the right guys to fit what he's trying to do. And this next pick in the draft, whatever it's going to be, I think is going to be the next piece of that. But I don't think he's afraid of trading it. I think he's listening to offers to see what the best offer is going to be and if there's something that makes sense for where the Pistons are and where they're trying to go.
So as far as just right now, there's not really a consensus as far as they're just locked on, let's say Kay Cunningham, they are actually still kind of open to possibly trading or sign or drafting Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green. Is there, like I was saying, is there any way where they just automatically, they're just not locked on one player that they could, you know, go with a Green or a Cade Cunningham?
Yeah, I think the options are wide open. I can see a scenario where they just say, you know what, Cade Cunningham is the easy choice in this. You don't want to mess it up. I can also see a scenario where they say, hey, Evan Mobley is a five who's really kind of a stretch four. He's got potential that he can do a lot of things and shore up that center position, because you don't get big men who are like that does what Evan Mobley can do. Those don't come along very often. So defensively, having a rim protector is just something that they've lacked for a long time. Andre Drummond, that they had a few years ago, wasn't the same type of player. He was more of a traditional center. Evan Mobley can be a shot blocker and can play stretch four if you need him to. And then Jalen Green can lock down your shooting guard position. Dwayne Casey said a couple of times last year that they just lacked shooting. They lacked a scorer, somebody who can just go out and get a bucket for them when they needed it. Jalen Green is exactly that. So I can see where they would consider any of those three, and there's a legitimate case that you can make for any of those guys being the person that the Pistons end up with. I just think that logically it's going to end up where Cunningham is that pick, and the only question is whether they end up trading that pick and getting a bigger package of assets back in return for all of that.
And so what's kind of your feeling as far as what's the fit with Cade Cunningham and Killian Hayes? Do you think they can fit together? Do you see a scenario where maybe they will try to move on from Killian Hayes, or do you see them as a potential backcourt where maybe Killian Hayes is more of the point guard and Cade Cunningham is more of the combo guard?
Well, I think you can do multiple things with that. At the end of the season, Killian Hayes moved off the ball a little bit, and he seemed to be a little bit better. And it's not just point guard that he can play. He's a facilitator. He'll find where the right play is. And what Dwayne Casey likes is having multiple, if you call them traditional point guards, on the floor at the same time. He did it in Toronto. He tried to do it with the Pistons when he had Hayes and Derrick Rose. He was looking to do something like that. It's just you needed those guys to be healthy. So I think that's where Cunningham makes the most sense to me, is that he allows Hayes to be on the ball and Cunningham can be the scorer. Cunningham can be on the ball and Hayes can be off and just have two guys who can run pick and rolls from either side of the court and just be able to get in the paint. And that's where Hayes was most effective last year, was getting in the paint and distributing and finding the right guy in their drive, kick, swing scheme. So I think it makes sense that they're not going to collide. They don't cancel each other out if somehow you end up with Cunningham and Hayes.
And as you mentioned earlier, that they are open to, you know, of course, the right trade package. What do you think it would take for the Pistons to move off that first pick? Because I know it would probably take a significant haul back to the Pistons for them even consider moving off that first pick.
Well, for me, it has to be the number two or number three pick. I don't want, because you want to be able to get Green or Mobley. The worst case scenario, if you don't get Cunningham, you're going to get Green or Mobley with the two or the three pick. You've got to have that, and you've got to have multiple other picks. The problem is, when you're dealing with Houston or you're dealing with Oklahoma City or some of the other teams that are mentioned in trade talks, is that a lot of them have future picks that belong to other teams that are probably going to be low lottery picks in the teens and not necessarily teams that are going to be bad. Maybe OKC's picks, if they keep their own and they stay in the status where they are, those can be maybe picks in the 6 through 10 sort of area, or maybe a little bit higher than that. But with Houston, it seems like a lot of their picks, if you're giving them the number one pick and they can start turning things around, then your lottery picks become less valuable. And I think that's the danger that you get into with any trade and any future draft picks that you're taking back, is right now they may seem like they're top 10 picks. But if this team gets better, they're going to end up maybe being in the teens and not something that you thought at the beginning of that.
And do you think that the Pistons are probably taking into account that the Rockets do have the Pistons draft pick? Do you think that's something that's maybe, if they do decide to trade out of that pick, that's something more they're leaning towards? Because on the Rockets side, this is a protected pick over the next several years that they may not even be able to convey anytime soon. So do you think that maybe is more relevant when it comes to whether they want to trade out of it, the fact that the Rockets do have their pick?
Yeah, I think that could play a factor in it. But I think you got to come with multiple picks. You got to get the number two. For me, you've got to get the number two or number three pick this year and multiple future picks too, to really make it worthwhile. And it seems weird because you're only moving up one pick, but you look at what the value is in a Cade Cunningham and then how much the Pistons value Evan Mobley or Jalen Green? Are they sort of on the same plane where they're both elite type players and you can take that step down, if you will, from one to the next? And you're going to acquire some other assets. The Pistons have traded a lot of their second round picks, so they need to refill the cupboard there too. So there's a lot of wheels turning and a lot of different things you got to consider in what the Pistons might trade for. But I think that's the starting point for me, is that you need the number two or number three pick if you're going to trade down, not the number 7 and 14 or 6 and 12 or anything like that. It's got to be two or three, and then some other future stuff too.
And if you're the Pistons GM, let's say you're in charge of the Pistons making that pick, I mean, what would you go with? I mean, are you pretty much locked on Kate Cunningham, or is there any chance that you're thinking about taking Jalen Green or Evan Mobley with that number one pick?
Well, for me, it's Kate Cunningham because he checks so many of the boxes, is that he's a winner. He's just a proven winner wherever he's gone. He could have taken an easy road and just, but he decided he wanted to go to Oklahoma State and start something there and be his own sort of guy. Not a team that was heralded or picked that had other top recruits around him, but he went into his freshman season as the presumptive number one pick, and he stayed there even though he didn't go to a top tier program. And that says something to me that he chose to sort of make his own road for where he wanted to go. And again, he can play the one, the two, the three. He can guard some fours. And at 6'8", maybe 225, that's a nice frame that you can put in a lot of different places on the court. And again, if the Pistons are at all shaky about Killian Hayes, Kate Cunningham seems to be the next best thing to be able to fill in with that.
And one more question as we wrap up this segment. You've been following the NBA, covering the NBA for a long time. You've been around a lot of front offices. How much do you think they value, let's say, Jalen Green, who went to the G League instead of going to college, and he did play against some NBA-type players in the G League? Do you think they value that more than, let's say, like Evan Mobley or Kate Cunningham that played 1 year in college? Do you think that's a big factor in how they judge players coming into the draft?
Yeah, I think there's something to that you're playing from an NBA level three-point line, and so the distance is already there. A lot of college guys, and Cade Cunningham was somewhere in that 40% range from three, but they say that big transition. Even Luke Kennard a couple of years ago, a very good three-point shooter in college, that he had to adjust to shooting from the NBA three line. It's another, foot and a half back that it takes some time to get used to that. Sadiq Bey, who was on the all-rookie team and shot 40% from three this year, said the same thing. He was in high school gyms last summer having to figure out how to shoot an NBA three and what the real distance was for that. So there is something to say for Jalen Green, who was able to shoot well from three last year and played in a pro scheme, and understand that there's some development there. Those guys are the same age, but just playing with NBA guys in an NBA environment, sometimes that college NCAA experience is a little bit different than what you're going to see in the NBA. So Green already has some of that transition down and behind him. So I think there is something in there that measures that, and that might be part of the consideration.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting going into the draft, seeing how this works out. I mean, I think a lot of times there's a lot of smoke screens that's going on from different front offices, so it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it all plays out on draft night. That's going to wrap it up for the first segment. In the second segment, we're going to talk about some of the actual current Rockets that actually were part of the Pistons organization. I wanted to get Rod's opinion on players like Christian Wood and Kyrie Thomas, situation. He actually didn't play there for very long, but he did have an impact on the Rockets this last year. So I want to get his opinion on that. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
Oh, and welcome back to Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media. We are joined by Rod Beard. He is a sports writer at the Detroit News. And I want to start off the second segment by asking about a current Rocket that actually had a really good year, you know, despite the injuries that he did suffer throughout the year. He had probably his best year of his career. I wanted to get Rod's opinion on Christian Wood. So first, I wanted to ask about when Christian Wood first came to Detroit, if I'm not mistaken, he was actually fighting for one of those final roster spots with Joe Johnson. Is that correct?
Yeah, he went down to the last day of trying to figure out the roster. And I think it was a tough decision for the Pistons trying to figure out. And Joe Johnson had an injury, and they knew he wasn't going to be right. And so Christian Wood just kind of got that spot by default. But it was going to be a decision between those two guys.
Yeah, and when they brought in Christian Wood, what was kind of the sense within the Pistons organization by Christian Wood? Was it more like he can maybe develop into the type of player that we're seeing now, or is it more he was a person as more like an insurance policy as a backup center?
No, I think they saw a lot of potential there in seeing that he had stretch four potential and could play some five, but he really hadn't had long stints where he could really show what he was doing in New Orleans and other places where he bounced around the league. He just hadn't had a real true shot. And they figured if he just took small bites and he didn't come in as a regular rotation guy, and even when he started, he wasn't a big minutes guy, but they just saw in the small bites that he was taking, he was very effective and he was starting to utilize those minutes and maximize that time. And the production just kept going up. And so they had to figure out what to do with him. And eventually he just became the starter after they traded Andre Drummond, that those minutes just flourished and flourished and flourished, and his production continued to grow with that too.
And speaking of that trade, like you said, after Andre Drummond was traded, that's when he kind of took off and other teams started to take notice. At that time, because of course we know how eventually it worked out with him signing with Houston, but at that time, was it almost like a foregone conclusion that Detroit was going to re-sign him, or was it still kind of some hesitation? You know, considering what you had spoken about before, he hadn't really had long stretches of this type of play, and he's bounced from team to team. What was kind of the sense of around Detroit as far as once he started playing well after that Drummond trade, was he like the number one priority going into free agency?
Yeah, I think he was going to be one of the big priorities there. But then getting in a new general manager, you know how things change very quickly. I think the big question was he going to be able to continue that with the new people around him that they were bringing in, and Blake Griffin being healthy and Derrick Rose being there? Could he have that same role and play those starter type minutes? When he really started to rise and ascended more, it was when all of those guys were injured and shut down for the rest of the season, and Christian became the centerpiece of the offense and really the only guy who you could dump the ball to, and he could do something on the perimeter or inside if you needed him. I think their thought process was that they were going to look at it in free agency, see what that number was, if he was going to be coming in at a manageable number. And I think that cap may have been somewhere in the 12 to 14 million range. And then when they looked at some of their other options and saw Jeremy Grant was out there, that they just went in a different direction.
And as far as that, do you think they have any regrets as far as maybe they should have went a little bit higher? Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that if they would have went higher, do you think Christian Wood was willing to come back to Detroit? Do you think that was an issue at all? Did he have any problem with coming back, or maybe thought maybe they were lowballing him, or was it just the fact that the Rockets just came in at a higher number and that's why he decided to go to Houston?
Yeah, I think he was looking for maybe a change of scenery too, and a place where he could really spread his wings. And at the same time, the Pistons saying, hey, we've got this opportunity to go and get Jeremy Grant. And that's really where they wanted to go. So I think it's all of those things bundled together. Not anything against Christian Wood at all. He's a top-notch guy. And whereas there may have been some questions about what he did in previous stops and whether he was going to be able to last in the league, he answered all of those questions in the time that he was here and just turned out to be a really good guy to work with and to talk to, and a good guy on the court too.
And one more question about Christian. Well, what did you see as far as his future? Do you see him as possibly, I mean, because before his injury this year, he was actually on track to be one of the players possibly that was going to be selected as an all-star. What's kind of his trajectory that you see for Christian Wood? Do you see him as more of a center, more of a power forward? And do you see him as a player that can possibly take it to even a next level to where maybe he's one year considered maybe for one of the all-NBA teams?
Yeah, I think that the sky's the limit for him, that he just has that skill set where he can hurt you on the perimeter. He can get inside on the post and do some damage. He has a nice turnaround game too, that if he continues to work, that he can be beyond an all-star level, maybe even on an all-NBA level if he continues on the trajectory he's on. But the injuries this year were so unfortunate because it looked like he was going to be an all-star and in that conversation for most improved player, just the way that he came in and he had worked almost seamlessly with James Harden during that early time that they were there. And then just continuing on.
Yeah, and it kind of leads me to my next question. I want to ask you about another former Piston, as even though he only played five games for the Rockets, actually had a pretty big impact in those five games, and that's Khyri Thomas. I know the Pistons at the time when he was drafted traded two future second-round picks, so I'm assuming that they were pretty high on him at the time. What was kind of the feeling about Khyri Thomas when they first traded those two picks for him? Was this someone I assume that they – feel that they can just stick right into the rotation? He was going to be a major part of that rotation.
Yeah, I think so. That was the thinking at the time, that he could be a 3-and-D guy, shoot 38-40+% from three, and be a lockdown defender on the perimeter. And with a lot of second round picks, you just don't get that type of optimism that they can turn into something like that. It's second round pick. Hey, can you just make the roster and stay past summer league? But Thomas did exactly that. He was a good locker room guy, a good on the court guy, but the injuries just started to creep in for him the same sort of way that he never got to show on the court that he could be that type of guy. Another guy, Bruce Brown, who got drafted in that same draft, eventually went to the Nets and became a rotational guy with the Nets, was the same sort of player. But Dwayne Casey always said that Khyri Thomas was ahead of Bruce Brown, but when Khyri got hurt, Bruce got that same opportunity and held on to it and just never let Khyri get back in the rotation.
And another thing I was reading as far as when I was looking up and doing some research on Khyri Thomas was that Dwayne Casey sees him more as a shooting guard that can occasionally take over the point guard. You kind of see him in that same spot as more of a shooting guard, that more of a shooting guard backup point guard type player.
Yeah, I think shooting guard is his more natural position, that he can slide in and give you a ton of minutes if you need him there. He's still young and looks to be healthy now. So I think he's more of a shooting guard than a point guard, but if you just need him to handle and initiate some offense, he can do that too.
Okay. Yeah. And like I said, he only played a few games for the Rockets, but he definitely had a huge impact. We can kind of see how he was defensive player of the year in college, you know, with the long wingspan, the 16 wingspan. He definitely is, I think, someone that the Rockets will consider bringing back, considering that they're still in rebuilding mode. So I think he's definitely someone that can be part of the rotation going forward into this next year. So that's going to wrap it up for the second segment. In the final segment, I want to get Rod's opinion on the playoffs so far, and of course, the, you know, the great NBA finals that we've had in these first five or six games. So I will get his opinion on that. So please stick around.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing here on the Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media. If you enjoy the show, do us a favor and drop a review or leave us some stars. Okay, in this final segment, I wanted to get Rod's opinion on the playoffs so far. As in my opinion, it's been a pretty exciting playoffs, even with the bigger names not making it past the first or second round. So that's kind of where I wanted to start by asking Rod, what's your been your opinion of the playoffs? I know a lot of people were down on it when LeBron went out early and Steph Curry didn't make it, and then you had people like Damian Lillard that didn't get past the first round. What's been your opinion on the playoffs so far, even though we haven't had the normal big names that we usually have in the playoffs?
No, I agree. I think it's been fun to watch and see some new personalities come out, and people have learned about Devin Booker who may not have known before. DeAndre Ayton's had a nice playoffs, and the Suns, I thought in the first round they'd get past the Lakers. I wasn't sure they would get this far as they have, but it just goes to playing well in these smaller market teams that don't always get the opportunities. It's not L.A., it's not New York, it's not Chicago, it's not Miami and teams that we've seen year after year after year. Now you're starting to see some newer ones get their opportunity in the spotlight, and they've done well with it, both Milwaukee and Phoenix. So that's been the most fun part for me is seeing that it's just not the LeBrons, as you said, and the Steph Currys, but we're seeing some new names and some new teams that have built it the right way. These aren't super teams that they just put together. These are teams that have drafted their main superstar guys and just added in veterans to fill in the blanks.
And speaking of building a team the right way, do you think that kind of changes the philosophy of some of the general managers out there, specifically like Detroit and Houston teams that are in rebuilding mode, that maybe you don't necessarily have to go out there and swing for home runs and free agency every year. Do you think that kind of changes their mindset, seeing teams like Phoenix and Milwaukee that kind of built it through the draft, built it through, not necessarily at the time. I mean, I don't think people were, you know, clamoring over Chris Middleton. And when they brought him in to Milwaukee, our players like Jake Crowder or Miles Bridges, do you think that changes some of the mindset of the GMs out there that maybe they can actually do it a different way than the normal way of trying to bring in superstars all at once?
Right. It's always been a couple of different schools of thought with that, but it's just like the Pistons right now with getting these rookies last year, the three first round picks that you add to it. And within 2 years, I mean, next year that Blake Griffin money comes off the books and they'll have $30 million, almost a max contract that they can bring in. So it's just like Phoenix did with Chris Paul, is that they started to show some progress last year in the bubble. And when they added Chris Paul this year and Jay Crowder, those are the pieces that they needed to get them over the top. So that's the mindset that a GM can have is, hey, you don't have to go create this super team. It's not like the Nets where they go and get Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving and Blake Griffin now, that you've got to assemble this super team and be a destination spot for people to go. But if you do it the right way in terms of your scouting and drafting, and then you add one free agent that can take you over, then that's another way to do it. And teams hadn't really been doing that. Even in Milwaukee's case, sure, you draft Giannis, you had Chris Middleton that you got from the Pistons, but you go and when you see that you're right there and you can't get over the hump, you go and you get a Drew Holiday and you make all of, and a Brook Lopez that they added. You just subtly add those pieces over the course of a couple of years and you tinker with it. But no, you don't need to have a big three or a big four of top 10 NBA players in order to win a championship anymore.
And actually, I wanted to ask you something else, something you just brought up, something I wanted to mention earlier. When the Pistons bought out Blake Griffin and he gave back $13 million to make that happen, is that something that's normally the case? And the reason I ask is because down here in Houston, the Rockets are kind of dealing with a similar situation with John Wall on whether you can try and buy him out, even though he has 40 plus million left in the next 2 years, which will make it extremely difficult. Is that something that's normal for NBA players to give back that much money to facilitate a buyout?
Well, it just depends. I think it was different in that Griffin, it's more than 1 year. Usually when you see a buyout, it's going to be in the final year and within that final year so they can choose the free agent destination they want to go to. I think in Blake's case, he was just looking at what the contract was. He's made enough money. So if you give back a little bit in order to and he understands where he is in terms of his health and how many years he has left in the league, that he doesn't have a lot of bites at the apple. And if the Nets look like an opportunity this year that he would be able to work with, then I think he just wanted out. And the money wasn't the issue. It was just finding the right fit for him. And he thought that was Brooklyn, and that's where he was able to go. But, yeah, in other cases, with multiple years left and getting a buyout there, it's very, very difficult. You're going to need a team owner who's willing to open up the checkbook and to make that happen and understands what your philosophy is in terms of rebuilding and what that timeline is going to be and whether you swallow poison pill a big contract in order to clean that slate and to move forward. You've got some young guys there who can expedite that process. And depending on what happens in the draft, whether you end up with the one pick or the two pick or whatever it is, you can slingshot your way into doing that really quickly with the young roster that you have. So I think that's the balance is it going to be worth it to buy out? And do you end up doing better with that? Or do you just keep the guy and let him be a veteran leader, even though he may have some limitations with his health and some other things?
Yeah, and I just think that's a good point what you just made as far as being a leader. Even though Wall had some difficulty this year, I think a lot of people need to realize that he's coming off major surgeries. And, you know, despite the bad year that the team had, he still averaged over 20 points a game. So I think he can provide that leadership to players like Kevin Porter Jr. or Jalen Green or Cade Cunningham, whoever they bring in, or even Evan Mobley. You know, having that veteran presence, every team needs that, whether you're at the top of the league or bottom. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you on that. And I want to get your opinion also just on the finals itself. I mean, Phoenix came out strong in the first two games. It kind of looked like they were going to run away with the series before it went back to Milwaukee. And now here we are several games later, and Milwaukee is now one game outside from winning their first ring in several decades. So what's been your opinion on the NBA finals so far?
Yeah, it's always been a back and forth affair that you're when you get to the finals, and they say that the series doesn't really start until a team wins on the road. The Bucks were able to do that in game five, but you've just got to continue to roll with those punches, that knowing that when we go back to Phoenix, that it's going to be tough there. And they had that opportunity to win it at home, but it's just so tough to close out a team with a veteran presence like a Chris Paul. You've got to be able to play and lock out all those distractions and everything else that's going on. And that's the tough part about this too, is that with those experienced teams like the Lakers and the Warriors, they know how to close out a series because they've been there and they've done it so many times. With teams who haven't done it before, you've got to figure it out when you get down by 10 or down by 15 or 16 like they did in game five. You've got to figure out how to overcome that and to be able to finish out a game and to knock a team out and to win that championship, which none of these guys have done. And so that's going to be the hardest part going the rest of the way. But again, it's just been fun to see Devin Booker and Ayton and Mikal Bridges and those guys get their time in the spotlight and the sunshine, and to see how they've responded to that. And Chris Middleton, who's just been unheralded for so long, been in Giannis's shadow and just been this all-star type guy. But now people are starting to realize what type of player he is too. And then Giannis himself, that story is just so inspirational for how he made it to the league, and to be right there with an opportunity to win a championship is just really special to see.
And how do you kind of see it playing out going forward? Like you said, it's going to be difficult for Milwaukee to close out Phoenix, you know, with when they're having players like Chris Paul on the other side, who's just like, you know, the other players are fighting for his first ring. How do you see it playing out going forward? And also, do you think that even though Chris Paul had a better game last game, he's still not the same player he was in game one, game two. Do you think that maybe possibly he has injuries he's dealing with at this point that maybe they're just not talking about? Or do you think that Milwaukee has just made the adjustment, for instance, of putting players like P.J. Tucker more on him, or having Drew Holiday pick him up more at the half court and putting more pressure on him?
Yeah, I think it's been some of the adjustments, and Budenholzer has been good at that in terms of dialing up a defense that can make the adjustments. And in games one and two, we didn't see very much of that, but they realize that Giannis is the best player on the court, and just let him live and let him go. Let him do what he does. He's going to get you 40 if you need it. And in those other games, Chris Middleton can get you 30 easily. So when you talk about big threes, Drew Holiday comes up with the defensive play that helps them to steal the game. But you lean on your stars and your complementary players. When they come in, they make a play for you when you need one. And that's the roadmap to victory. I think that Milwaukee should be able to close it out at home, but if they don't, going back on the road and trying to win in a game seven is going to be even more difficult than it was in game five.
And one more thing I want to kind of get your opinion on, I think this kind of just been brushed under the rug, is did you think it was any chance that Giannis would even be able to come back and play after that injury, that scary knee injury he had in the last series, not only come back and play, but put up the crazy number that he's putting up, over 30 points and 12 rebounds and almost 6 assists a game? Did you think he had any chance to come back and actually playing in this round after that knee injury he had?
No, I didn't think so. And I think that's the one decision that's been the difference maker in this finals, is that they wanted in game one what Giannis had. And the easy decision would have been, hey, let's give him another game to rest and we'll save him for the rest of the series. But once they saw in game one that he was very close to being his 100% self, that they said, hey, we can roll him out here for the rest of this series and we don't have to worry about it. So even though the Bucks lost game one, I think that was inspirational enough and a message for them to say, we've got the full Giannis and we don't have to dance around. Maybe he's going to be able to play. Maybe he's going to be a little bit limited, but they knew that from game one, so they could game plan for the rest of the series with having him at full force.
And one more question before we wrap this up. I want to ask you about Team USA. And actually, we just got the news that Jeremy Grant has been placed in health and safety protocols. What's been kind of your opinion of Team USA so far? They have one more exhibition game tonight before they head, you know, over to Tokyo for the Olympics. What's been kind of your impression? Are you more of, well, these are exhibition games, it's been kind of a rushed season, and they're kind of throwing the team together and it's just taking time for them to get together? Or are you worried that maybe they're going to have a real struggle when it comes to the Olympic play?
Well, I think they end up figuring it out. And what people aren't talking about is that they've got Devin Booker, Chris Middleton. Yeah. They've got help coming. So there are other guys that are in the finals that are going to end up playing on that Olympic team. But it's just chemistry. You can't just – it's like when you go to a Lifetime Fitness or you play a pickup game and you just pick five random people to play on your team. It's not always going to work because you don't know how the other guys play. You don't know the chemistry isn't there and the timing isn't there, and it takes a little bit to do it. So, yeah, the first two losses were alarming to a certain degree, but as they start to figure it out during pool play in the Olympics and as they get to the medal rounds and things like that, I think the talent is going to show. And you're missing a couple of good scorers in Booker and Middleton, and you're not going to have your full complement of players there either with the COVID issues there. But I think they end up figuring it out. I think with Tatum, with Lillard, with the scoring ability they have, the one question that you might have is defensively, can they go out and get stops when they need them? But now adding JaVale McGee, I think that's going to help them to get a rim protector at the back of the rim and the back of the defense there too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, like you said, it's not easy just and also, you know, international teams are getting a lot better. So, yeah, you can't just roll the ball out there like you did back in the 90s and expect that Team USA is just going to roll over people, especially when they haven't played together, like you said. And it's just going to take some time for them to get that practice time. And I think this time in between now and the Olympics, after this last game, I think that'll help them out a lot. And like you said, they're going to have bringing players like Middleton and bringing players like Devin Booker. I mean, that makes a huge difference as we've been seeing in the finals. Before we wrap up this podcast, Rob, why don't you let everybody know again where they can find all your work?
On Twitter, DET News Rod Beard, RODBEARD. That's where links to stories and all of the stuff is. And my DMs are open if anybody wants to interact and ask a question about the draft or any of the other stuff. More than happy to reach out to fans and talk about some of the stuff.
Yeah, and again, I definitely appreciate you jumping on. It's been great. I got a lot of great information. So thank you again for jumping on the podcast with us today.
Hey, anytime. I appreciate you having me on.
Definitely. That's going to do it for today's episode. So if you haven't already done so, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to follow Apollo HOU for blogs, merch, video, podcasts, and more original Houston sports content not found anywhere else. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back for our next episode of the Launchpad Podcast covering your Houston Rockets.